It's time to come along on a journey for an all-new movie mastery. I am your host, John, and over there is the other host, Jeff.
Hi.
Together, we watch the movies that you've recommended, and we are coming back with a real blast from the past for today.
Because the inspiration for so many Halloween costumes.
Yeah, I mean, this was like the original like Joker costume, where for a while after Nolan's Joker came out, everyone was Nolan's Joker.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And this was the same thing. It's the Crow.
Yeah.
As soon as the Crow came out, you were like, oh my God, I'm a skinny guy and I can just have like a black shirt and black pants and put some like white face makeup on. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I have the easiest thing ever.
Let me ask you a question, John. Do you still have a Crow costume friend?
Oh man, no.
I do. I have one left. One diehard Crow costume friend. He wears a Crow costume every Halloween, and wow, also any other excuse he can come up with to wear his Crow costume. I still have a Crow friend.
I mean, if I looked even remotely like Brandon Lee, I would dress up like the Crow.
He looks like Captain Adama in Crow makeup.
I would love to watch Adama in Crow makeup. That's a thing I would love to see.
He looks like Edward James Olmos with Crow hair most of the time. And then every once in a while, he looks like Edward James Olmos as the Crow.
Well, that's excellent. So, we watched The Crow, the original one from 1994 with Brandon Lee.
Mm-hmm.
His last movie.
Yeah, and also this is our second Brandon Lee movie that we're watching, because we also did Laser Mission.
Yeah, man.
Also, no lasers in this movie. What do we have to do to put Brandon Lee in the same area as a laser?
I don't know.
Well, I guess now we need a shovel.
Oh, ooh, that was mean.
Oh,
don't you do that. It's too soon.
I meant a shovel
so we could... It has been 25 years, but it is too soon.
I meant so we could dig out my background laser.
My background laser.
My backyard laser. I keep a laser in my backyard.
I buried a laser like a laser dog.
Uh-huh. Yeah. For safety.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I don't know where you're going with this.
No one knows.
No one knows.
We are going to talk a little bit before we get into the full spoiler. Let me tell you, I think I watched this close to when it came out, and man, when we sat down to watch it again, the only two things I could remember about this movie,
mm-hmm,
were the big fight scene he has with
a bunch of thugs,
all the bad guys.
Yeah, because that's the scene where like the actor dies. So,
well, no, it's mostly because that scene is like the most action in the film.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Like, it's stuck in my brain as something I remembered.
Yeah.
And then also the fight at the church.
Right, yeah. I this is one of those movies, I don't remember when this came out, so I'm going to...
94.
Oh, for Christ's sake. I was like 14. This would have been aimed right at me, and I still didn't like it very much. This is definitely an example of a movie where I listened to the soundtrack more than I ever actually watched the film.
I mean, that's fair. It's got a rad Nine Inch Nails track on there.
Oh, it does. There's a lot of goth schlock, though.
Oh, I mean, that's the kind of thing where I was just too young for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when The Crow came out, I had not hit that point yet where I was like, yeah, things suck. I was just kind of like, I'm 10, and I don't realize what depression is yet.
Oh boy, another marshmallow.
Yay! The world is great. Nothing's ever going to go wrong.
Oh, a boy pushed me. It's okay. I'll go to my room. Yeah.
And then, you know, hormones happened and my brain chemicals shut off.
Sure, yeah. I don't know. I saw this when I was 14. I was real busy being
14.
14. I was really angry about stuff.
Well, yeah, you were 14.
Yeah. So anyway, that's...
It's amazing that it didn't really hit home with you.
Oh, resonate? Yeah.
An angry person came back from the dead and was like, I'm angry.
He's just so lame. I don't know. Maybe this is like an Emperor's New Clothes thing for me, but ever since I was a kid, all the Crow lines, every time he gets a big laugh line or drops a line in the movie, they're always so lame.
Yeah, I mean... This did not have the greatest of writing for that, but... It's so influential.
It is, yeah.
You can definitely see a lot of this in things like The Matrix later on,
mm-hmm,
and the whole like idea of the dark hero, this really resonated a lot with that.
I mean, to be fair, I think he is predated by the titular dark hero himself, Darkman.
Darkman.
Yeah.
Which is not a dark hero, really, as much as he is just a weirdo.
I mean, to be fair, this guy isn't much of a dark hero either. He's revenging.
That's a dark hero. He's killing people. That's dark.
Yeah, but that's not hero. He's an anti-hero.
That's a dark hero.
At best, he's an anti-hero. He's just alive to kill four people. Anyway, I'm sorry. We're getting into spoiler territory here for this ancient movie. I don't know.
It almost holds up.
Yeah,
like it's sure. not going to be the same as when you were 14 if you liked this movie and you come back to it, because now you're not just like a sad little goth that's angry at the world. You're probably a sad big goth that's angry at the world.
There's maybe, what, three good superhero movies in the 90s, and I guess this is probably one of those three.
Oh, yeah. When you start looking at things like, well, you got to compare The Crow against, like, Steel.
Well, there's all the Batman movies other than Batman 89, so depending on how you feel about Returns, which came out in, like, 91 or 92.
Yeah. And you can kind of see a little bit of that Burton influence on mostly the
cityscape shots.
Setting.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that this one is also a big influence on Blade.
That's true.
Yeah, letting us know that you can have a movie where your villain is just some guy and he has like a group of thugs and it was
it's just, what is this? Oh, my villain is a real dirtbag.
Yeah, so anyway, it's an influential movie. It's an important movie. It set up a lot of sequels you shouldn't bother with.
I've never seen one of the sequels.
I've seen one.
That's weird.
So, no, I had a really gothy friend growing up, so.
Oh, well. Everyone had a real gothy friend growing up.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you were the one.
Yeah, no, you say if there's two people on a bus, one of them is the crazy one.
Yeah.
Watch out, that bus driver better be crazy or else it's you. Yeah, but you had a goth friend growing up, right?
Oh, like, yeah, like I had one. Goth friends growing
up. Multiple goth friends.
Yeah, they were great. I loved them.
Yeah, goths are good people.
Yeah.
I'm a huge goth fan.
Yeah.
I could
never get into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I'm not a goth. Number one is that it doesn't matter how much black you put on me, I still just look like a jolly fat dude.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, it doesn't matter if you put me in all black. I just look ridiculous at that point.
Yeah. You do. You start looking like that guy from the Butterfly Effect.
I know what you're talking about.
Exact, right? Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't work.
I would have to be way surlier to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And neither of us can do goth, but we're both pro goth.
Yeah. We are goth allies.
But what that meant was that when I was a kid, I got a lot of exposure to goth media. Like Clan of Xymox music and Susie and the Banshees and what have you. None of it ever resonated with me, even a little bit. I was always like, oh, this is so cute that they're kind of scream singing. And
see, whereas my goth friends introduced me to industrial, and I was like,
sure.
I actually do like this.
Yeah, anytime they would be like, hey, let's just listen to this Typo Negative or this Gravity Kills, I'd be like, sweet, all right, I'm on board.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, pro goth. Also, huge fan of Boob Shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of black lipstick, honestly.
Yeah. So the only thing that keeps us from being 100% pro-goth and this being a goth podcast, or a goth cast, if you will, is that both of us are too smiley and dumpy to really pull off the look.
We just can't do it.
Yeah. If you imagine, say, for example, John Candy in full goth rig.
I loved John Candy in full goth rig. That was a great movie.
If you imagine John Candy
full candy and goth gin.
Full candy and gin goth rig.
John Goth in the full candy.
Once you're done masturbating, you've basically put together what we would look like as goths.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. There's going to be a little bit of music. We're going to come back with the full, unedited, spoilerific review of us reviewing a movie, and it's called The Crow. Oh, yeah.
If you could just imagine David Lee Goth rigging a candy john.
a Candy John?
Yeah, it's a...
Does that, like, comma, and you are addressing me? Imagine...
David Lee Goff.
David Lee Goff.
Yeah.
Rigging a candy, John.
No, it's a Candy John is a toilet made of candy.
Oh, I thought it was a candy purveyor of prostitutes?
No, no, no. It's a toilet made of candy, so you can actually have a for reals push pop.
It's a juicy jewel of flavor.
Well, that's a ring pop, but sure.
Well, yeah, I'm going into my ring.
I mean, obviously.
Well, I mean, talking about goths, they all had them fucking candy rings on.
Also, I really like...
If you were a raver goth.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you're one of those raver goths with, like, your candy necklaces and
your JNCOs.
15... I mean, were those goths... I think they're... Cyber goth is the point that we're talking about. That's the intersection of raver and goth culture.
I believe once rave culture kind of receded is when you got cyber goth.
Yeah, because the wave had to pull back. Because at first... Because I was a raver. That was a culture I could do.
Yeah.
And
you loved drugs and being sweaty.
I pretty much.
I mean, you were going to be sweaty anyway, so you may as well.
No, I mean, I was a sweaty kid, yeah, but it was mostly water for me at the time because I was a big pansy. But I really loved the music. So I would go to those events and I'd just dance. I wasn't the kid who had like 15 pacifiers on. but I would go, but I was part of that culture for a while. And there weren't goths there at first. And eventually the cyber goth movement came along. And then, you know, I was like, oh, what if ravers also had, you know, more black in the ensemble and gas masks?
Oh, yeah. It's basically just take a rave outfit and now make everything either black or neon.
Change one of the colors to black. So it's red and black stripes instead of red and green stripes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll have like a neon green mesh or something.
Put
in
a bunch of plastic sticks in your hair for some reason and you're done. You're a cyber goth.
There you are.
I don't know.
Get yourself a gas mask.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about the gas mask.
Oh, you have to.
That was close. How else you can look creepy in pictures that are all like fisheye lensed?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry about all
crow.
That. The crow.
The crow starts in media res.
Mm-hmm. Because it is a media property. Yes.
Yes. It starts right in the middle of media.
Yeah.
So
it starts with a smash cut.
Smash.
Yeah.
It starts with a smash mouth. It's weird that they were showing up in 94 on here.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it does start kind of dramatic, doesn't it?
It's yeah, a bunch we get a quick zoom over the city with a child narrating about like sometimes love and it's eternal and things and whatnot. It's very bad.
The city, however, is a very pretty miniature. Like, you can tell it's done with a camera being pushed over a miniature city with CGI fires added.
And the CGI fires look very much like someone just, like, click and placed fire onto buildings.
Yeah, they look like they're made out of Photoshop fried chicken. But the city itself is a gorgeous miniature.
Oh, yeah. It's very good looking. And honestly, the camera work they do here when they, you know, go across the city while the narration is happening, and as they get to the apartment, it sort of transitions into the actual set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good seamless transition.
Oh yeah, it's pretty, it's well done. This movie was competently made.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, except for like the onset deaths and so on.
Well, yeah,
competently made beyond that. It's at least as competently made as the Twilight Zone movie.
Ouch.
Ha. Actually, three times as competently made.
And more grown up.
I'm sorry. I've gotten it all out of my system now. No more dead actor jokes.
Thanks.
Okay.
So, here we see a dead Brandon Lee.
Oh, come on now. I mean, yes, technically that is.
Yes, that is what we see.
He is acting a dead body. Yeah, he has fallen out of it. I mean,
fallen.
Everyone's seen this movie. He has fallen, do you get it? Out of a six-story window.
Yeah. So, it's a big crime scene. There's a bunch of police there. We see Ernie Hudson as our investigator.
Yeah, Sergeant Albrecht.
Yeah. And we have the
13-year-old.
The 13-year-old. I can't remember her name. Sarah?
I thought it was an L name.
No, man. We got Shelly and... That was Sarah. Yeah.
Sarah. Oh, okay.
Shelly and Sarah. Those are so
Stussy.
Yeah. So Sarah is a young girl that hangs out with Shelly and Eric, the two people who got assaulted up here.
Yes.
Eric is dead on the ground because he got thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. And Shelly is clinging to life as they take her away in an ambulance.
Yes. And Ernie Hudson, as he loads her and helps load her into the ambulance, is like, hey, you're going to be fine. And also your boyfriend or whatever is just fine, too.
Yeah, everything's fine. Don't you worry.
And then the girl's like, you're lying to them.
Why did you lie to her? And he's like, well, I had to.
And he's like, well, she's like, now you're lying to me.
You told me that she would be fine. That's a lie. And it was.
Indeed it was. They both die.
We then cut to a year later.
1 year. Oh, also there's a lot of flashbacks of what was happening, I guess.
Oh, we get that during...
No, that's right. During the resurrection, we get those instead. But in the beginning, we just get the detective character, another kind of semi-bad guy in the film, popping up and being like, huh, looks like they were going to get married tomorrow. What kind of person gets married on a Halloween, huh? Eh?
No one. And I was like, damn, that's cold if you're a cop.
That's ice cold, yeah.
Like, these people are dying. There's someone still alive that would be the bride. And you're like, no one gets married on Halloween. You get it? Because they're dead now? Huh? Oh, you're not dead yet. Hey, your boyfriend is, though.
Yeah. Also, the opening narration had some shit about how today's October 30th, also known as Devil's Night.
Yeah. The big, for some reason, thing in this city, which... they never specifically say, but we think is Detroit.
Well, at one point, Funboy calls his assembled army of gang people Motor City Maniacs.
Well, that's not Funboy. That's T-Bird.
T-Bird calls his collection of dudes Motor City Maniacs. So that probably means they're in Detroit.
I mean, they could have come to wherever this is from Detroit. But, you know, when we see the city, most of it is on fire. So it may as well be Detroit.
It's probably Detroit.
But their whole scheme that somehow makes them money is like, all right, every Devil's Night, we go out and set like 200 fires. And then step two is question mark and step three is profit.
Yeah, and I don't know. But we see they're sitting around a table and this group of gang idiots are sitting around a table. And, oh, no, the first thing they do is in the table scene, it's them busting up an arcade.
Yeah, for some reason. I don't know why.
They were instructed to do so by the villain of the film because they report back that it has, in fact, been done. And this is intercut. The scene of them busting up old arcade cabinets and what have you is intercut with the grave of Eric Draven. get it?
It would only be better if his name was Eric DeCrow.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Eric, the main character, a crow. Yeah, it's French.
Hi, I'm Eric DeCorvid.
Yeah, so Eric Draven, his crow winged cherub like headstone, he crawls his way up out of the grave and is like, ah, I'm alive. What? Oh no! Then kind of stumbles, muscly and shirtless, towards his old apartment.
Yeah, there's the narration bit has a thing about like a folk tale of crows taking the souls to the underworld, and sometimes the crow takes the soul back.
It's in the comic upon which this is based. It's a Native American myth thing.
Okay.
Because my goth friends who were all into the crow were also all into the crow comic books, and well, so I've at least seen the first several dozen of, or four, like four of those stories.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, he's kind of making his way back to the apartment while these four kind of gang dudes are sort of pulling guns on each other for fun.
Yeah, the scene of our four sort of main targets for Eric is weird because they've apparently been working together for a long time.
At least a year.
At least a year, but it seems like they've been together for a while. Like, this is a crew that is established.
Yes.
And you have Tintin, the only other black guy aside from Ernie Hudson in this movie.
Yeah.
Tony Todd's in this.
I was going to say, Tony Todd. Isn't that Tony Todd who is Tintin?
No. Tony Todd is the second in command.
Oh, okay. I thought I recognized that creepy kind of...
No, that's Lawrence Mason is Tintin.
Oh, huh. Weird. Got that backwards. Anyway, yeah, I was going to say, at least there was also that second in command guy.
Yeah.
So this guy, Tintin, is...
He's the knife guy.
He's the knife guy. And then we've also got the leader, who I don't think...
T-Bird is the leader.
Doesn't seem like he was played by anybody in particular.
He doesn't have any particular, like, thing to him. Because at least Tintin was like, I'm the knife guy, and
Funboy
is the drugs guy.
Yeah, he's super meth heady. And then there's the other one.
Skank.
Oh, Skank is even druggier. He's the druggiest guy.
Yes, Skank is basically the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and T-Bird is called that because he dies in a car. Do you get it?
Well, he's called T-Bird because he owns a T-Bird,
which
but then he dies
which he
in
dies
it.
In, yeah.
Oh, it's David Patrick Kelly.
Oh, wait.
He's been in stuff.
Is he the bad guy from The Warriors?
From The Warriors?
Yeah, the show, The War, the movie,
you know,
The Warriors.
The show, The Warriors?
No, the movie, The Warriors.
Yes,
you know,
he is.
He is the bottle guy, right?
Yeah, he's Luther from The Warriors.
Okay, all right, so I'm not wrong.
Yeah, no, you're
the whole
not
movie,
wrong.
I was like, is that the bottle guy from The Warriors?
Is that the bottle guy?
Yeah, so, cool. I thought the whole
he
time I was
never
like,
asks Eric if he wants to come out and play.
Yeah, when I was watching him, I was like, oh, is that the bottle guy from The Warriors? And I was like, no, wait, you just think every dirtbag in a movie about dirtbags is the bottle guy from The Warriors.
So, yeah, they all have one thing, I guess, T-Bird, is that he has a car.
Yeah. If you're curious, John, in the second movie, there's also four guys who need to die.
Good.
And one of them is Iggy Pop.
Not playing anything, just Iggy Pop.
More or less, yeah.
But they get into some dumbass argument because they're shooting bullets. You get it? Because they take a bullet and put it in their mouth and then they shoot a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So they're shooting bullets. You get it?
I'm not sure if they're actually drinking the bullets.
Yeah, that's supposed to be the thing they're doing.
Yeah, okay. So they're doing that. They're just being weird. And then at one point, one of them gets matted. Or they all pull guns and knives on each other.
Yeah, Tintin stops Fun Boy from shooting his because he says that
only pussies drink last.
Pussies drink last.
Yeah.
Then they all pull guns on each other or knives if you're Tintin.
I mean, that's kind of a tough... The pussies drink last is kind of a tough call. Because at that point, you're just like, all right, well, I guess the two of us are going to sit here with these drinks or try to drink them super fast. It's not going to make the table very fun.
No, man. He stopped him from drinking and drank his.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair.
He's
right.
Like, you're the only one left to drink.
Ha ha. I win. So anyway, they have a shootout and they are mollified briefly by another...
Well, they don't have a shootout.
No, they don't. They have a Mexican standoff that ends because of T-Bird. And then a woman comes walking over who's going to turn out to be another character, and she's like the waitress at the bar they're all at.
Yeah. And turns out she's going to be the mother of Sarah,
yeah,
the young girl that we saw a year ago.
Yeah, so there you go. This a year ago, this very day.
This very day.
Okay, at this point, Eric manages to get back to his apartment.
And he's having flashbacks the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's all just, we get what happened in the apartment, which is an assault and rape and murder.
Yeah, and it's very confusing. It's very clear that they raped his fiance, but also just sort of wandered around the house and made fun of their stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was apparently supposed to be just a, like, go in there and bust stuff up and scare her,
and
because she had a petition, like, trying to stop them getting evicted.
Yeah, they were going to evict her from the building, which is weird because then they succeed more or less by murdering them, and the building is exactly the same as it was a year ago. They did not do anything after getting them evicted.
Well,
maybe it takes a long time.
They were going to get rid of everyone in that building.
Oh, and now they can't because it's a crime scene.
Well, I think they did. They managed to get rid of everyone.
Well, then how come they haven't redeveloped the building or whatever the fuck the plan was then?
I don't know. The villain doesn't have plans.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, the villain is just like, oh, yeah, every Devil's Night I set a ton of fires, and that makes money.
Yeah.
And you're like, how?
What are you doing?
I had this whole thing where I needed to evict this entire building full of people.
The important
Why?
Thing is that eyes are magical or something. I don't know. I'm very confusing.
Yeah, the villain in this does not have any clear plans for what he wants to do.
Yeah, he's got a biling and a bowl full of eyeballs and a haircut that is really something.
But, you know, when the crow shows back up at the apartment, it's still got the, like, crime scene tape over it.
Yeah, the crime scene tape is still there. The window's still broken so that there's still water getting in from the rain. His cat's still in there and is perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah. His cat, Gabriel.
Do you get it?
Do you get it, though?
I must remind you again that he fell out of a six-story window and became fallen. Do you get it?
Also, there's going to be several scenes in this movie where he
intentionally falls off stuff.
Well, also in when he falls or is being shot at, he will do the Christ pose.
Yes. Yeah, he does the Christ pose all the time. Do you get it?
Yeah, he tells a Jesus joke in the movie.
Yeah, it's heavy-handed is what we're trying to say. The crow is.
Yeah. It's a little much on the imagery. It's a little less heavy on the imagery than say Man of Steel.
So this is basically the moment where he remembers how much his wife liked lying in bed and being teased with stupid things, and also accidentally setting stuff in the kitchen on fire. It's basically soft focus dead girlfriend footage, which
yeah
is so common.
There's
I'm surprised there wasn't an under the cover shot where you could see her going ha 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 as the light streamed in through the covers.
Oh no, that's a slightly more recent thing for the dead girlfriend shots.
Okay, that's fair.
It did, however, have him like taking her up to a loft where there were the like 200 candles lit, which I always love imagining the prep for that, where you're just like, and one, and two.
Yep. Okay, good. This one here. Oh, oh, that one fell over. That one went out.
Oh, hey, whoa,
okay, okay, hang on.
Four?
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there for like 3 hours lighting candles.
And how much are pillar candles again? $17. Jesus the fucks. I spent $9,000 on this particular boning.
Yeah.
And I can't use those candles again for the boning the same lady. She'll be like, well, I remember this candle arrangement. And they'll be like, but I put them around the tub this time.
Ooh, but this time it's all in the bathroom instead of the bedroom.
Yeah.
Also, her bathroom is huge.
And I scattered rose petals to it. Yeah, okay, you're trying too hard. You know you can just put it in me, right? We've been together like 2 years. It's okay.
We're gonna get
married. No, but we have a fairy tale romance where sometimes you're lying on a bed laughing, and I show up with a extremely cheap mask and go a boo with it on
a boo.
Like, well, because they show that shot of him having like that drama mask, which is foreshadowing, because then his face will pick up that makeup.
Yep. Anyway, yeah, we get a whole bunch of that, and then it's very traumatic for him because he remembers the entire assault going
traumatic
down.
Enough that what he does is grab the window thing where he fell out the window and do a trapeze move and then slide back in.
Hell yeah,
so that
does.
We can see that his wounds can heal instantly.
Yeah. And good.
Okay.
He decides that now that he's got supernatural powers and a crow familiar, that it's time to dress up like a mime and kill the people that fucked him up.
I'm not sure if he's wearing makeup or if that's magic in this movie.
Oh, no, it's makeup. They show him putting it on.
Oh, okay, so it's always makeup. All right.
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, he puts on his mime outfit and his black crow costume.
Yep.
He just has a crow costume.
He's just got a crow costume in the closet.
When he shows up.
He was like, man, that was real convenient. I was going to dress up for the crow last Halloween.
He keeps showing up to the villains and they're like, oh, god damn it, a crow costume.
You're like the 50th one I've seen tonight. Come on.
It's like it's 1994. It is 1994. I am the crow.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Weird.
All of them are dressed up as characters from Independence Day. What are you, the crow? Remember me?
So the first target on his hit list is Tintin.
So Tintin is confusing. Tintin is selling some pawned items from a night of thievery to a dirty pawn dealer named John Polito. Weirdly played by John Polito.
No, his name is Gideon.
His name is Gideon. Do you get it?
Do you get it, though?
Played by John Polito. And Tintin's like, yeah, I got this ring worth 24. And he's like, that's worth 18 if it's worth a nickel.
What is this, a blood stain on here? I'll give you $50 for the lot.
Yeah, so he gives him $50. And then the Tintin leaves and seems to try to claim that being underpaid is a racist thing.
I guess.
For his stolen stuff, because when Polito's like, yeah, get out of here, close the gate on your way out. And he's like, oh yeah, I'll close the gate real good for you, massa. And you're like, what? Where did that come from?
Weird.
Okay. I guess.
Sure.
Maybe Gideon's been racist to him in the past or something.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But he goes walking around, and we know he's a knife guy because he is constantly just twirling knives for no reason.
He's in a trash can fire.
Yeah.
Is he homeless?
I don't understand most anything about how this gang works at all.
No.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah. So because he's by himself, and he just by himself goes, starts a trash can fire, and huddles around a trash can fire for warmth. And I'm like, if you've been working for, what's his name, Showtime or Money Dollar?
Top Dollar.
Top Dollar. If you've been working for Top Dollar for more than a year, and you're still homeless, and you're like his private assassin or whatever, you need to talk about getting a raise. Plus, it means that the crow shows up and just immediately murders a mentally ill homeless man.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be like, oh, this guy's just a real dirtbag, and he's fine running around the streets, and he like lights a cigarette on a trash fire. And you're like, okay, great.
I get, because the movie makes me think that this is a homeless dude. Because that's who huddles around trash fires in Detroit.
and the mayor.
And the mayor. It's and he's not the mayor, because the mayor's not named Tintin.
No. John Mayer, though, does huddle around a trash fire.
Yeah, John Mayer. That's what he's famous for.
Yeah, huddling around trash fires.
Weirdly, it's that and dating a lot of really famous women.
So the crow manages to find Tintin using crow vision.
Uh-huh. Because his crow can see it. He can see through his crow's eyes.
Yeah. And that's going to come in handy.
So he starts walking up to Tintin, and Tintin responds with a flurry of what I have to assume is made-for-TV movie dialogue. Like, I know this came out in theaters, but everyone's always calling each other stuff like Dusthead and Steam Face and stuff like that. It's very weird. The insults are very weird.
I know it's supposed to be trying to kind of be noir evocative of like, hey there, Buster.
Yeah, I suppose.
And so they're like, oh yeah, they're real ear slappers.
Yeah. Ah, their pants are pulled up way too low.
Pulled up way too low.
I'm a 1950s tough talking guy. My pants are pulled up to 1 inch below my nipples per regulation. That way you can't see my gut.
So Tintin makes a bunch of threats.
Yeah, get out of here, crackhead, dusthead, clown mime.
What are you
mime
looking for?
Yeah.
You're looking for drugs? Well, too bad. You're going to get a knife.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're going to get killed with a knife. And then he kicks the trash fire at him, and they have a fun little fight.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing about this movie is the crow, as long as his crow is alive, he's invincible. So
well,
none of these fights have, I mean, they're neat to watch, but it's kind of like watching a Spectre movie in that, you can't hurt the guy.
Well, yeah.
You can hurt him, but you can't kill him.
No, you're just here for the sort of thrill of revenge.
Yeah, it's atmosphere and revenge thrills. So the fight, if it goes on too long, you're like, come on already. You're just goofing around at this point.
And that's one of the things, though, is at least having Brandon Lee be the character, you're like, oh, you can do stuff. Like, you're at least interesting to watch when you fight.
It is kind of weird that this character, because we established Eric Draven, do you get it, is the lead singer and guitarist for a band called The Hangman's Noose.
Hangman's Joke.
The Hangman's Joke. And not, for example, a martial artist who can do, like, flippies and stuff. But the crow is those things.
Oh, hell yeah.
He
gets supernatural crow powers, which include backflips.
Yeah, backflips and kip-ups and all those kind of fun things. So, anyway, he gets in a fight with this dude who throws knives. He's like, yes, now you're going to meet my knives.
My two friends, they never miss.
Yeah.
And proceeds to miss with them.
Their names are Knifey and Mr. Never Misses.
Mr. Knife Guy and Mrs. Knife Guy, they're very happily married. Thank you very much.
So he throws the knives at the crow, who just catches them or dodges them. And
yeah, he ends up killing Tintin. And
who's like, I think his first big stupid line is, victims, huh? I guess we're all victims. And then,
which is weird, because Tintin didn't say anything about victims?
No, he was saying, you're about to be a murderer. Like, you're about to become intimately familiar with the concept of murder. I like murder. Murder's fun.
Yeah, but when you're like, victims, I guess we're all victims. You're like, no one mentioned victims. Why are you saying victims, huh?
I don't know. It's his first time, John. Cut the guy a little slack. He's not been crowing long.
Look, he's been dead for a year. Witty comebacks are still slow on the docket.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff he could have said at the time. I'm sure he's been spending the whole time in the grave going, God, when that one guy was reading, like, poetry to us and making fun of the poetry, I could have said such cool things.
Oh. Anyway, that leads him to Gideon's, because he manages to torture the location of where his engagement ring got pawned to,
mm-hmm.
and it has not sold in the year since Gideon has had it, apparently.
No. Probably because it was, I mean, these are two people living in the poorest part of Detroit on a local band salary, so.
Yeah, but.
I mean, like, amazing. The
who's going to buy all of these things then in a pawn shop if no one's going to actually come in and take them?
I mean, to be fair, John Polito is keeping the rings hidden. He literally has them in a lockbox under the table. He's not, like, putting them out on a display or anything.
Why would you get all of these rings and then be like, yeah, I don't want anyone to buy these?
He just likes rings, man. He just collects rings.
He likes rings, man.
He likes rings, and he collects them, so if anyone ever punches him, the rings will just come off him instead.
Exactly. He'll be able to survive.
Yeah, and then probably grab some of the rings before they flash and disappear.
So the crow...
Gotta go fast.
The crow...
Shit on me.
Too early.
I just wanted to be the first to say it.
The crow shows up at Gideon's and beats the shit out of him and asks for the ring back. And the most notable thing here is that the signature line for Gideon is "shit on me."
So he tries to shoot the crow. He's like, "Hey, look over there," and then he shoots him through the hand, and he's like, "Ah, ha, ha, you're gonna have to be fitted for a coroner's jacket or whatever," and he shoots him through the hand, and then the crow holds up his hand and it heals, and he says some pithy response thing.
But yeah, the whole time, anytime the crow comes at him, he's just like, "Oh, shit on me!
Yeah,
shit on me!"
Well, first he's like, "I gotcha, shit." Oh wait, he's coming back up now. "Shit on me, shit on me, shit on me!" And you're like, "Wow, is it?" I guess that's just like his last request.
I mean, he knows what he wants.
Yeah, the dude is not afraid to ask for what he wants. I'll give him that.
The crow burns down Gideon's and sends him off to tell the bad guys that he's a coming and hell's coming with him.
Oh, and he takes a bunch of rings and loads them into his shotgun and takes his old guitar back.
Yeah. Well, the rings into the shotgun is what he then fires into the place to set it ablaze.
Yeah, I know. I just thought it was kind of a cute moment.
Yeah.
And then he also has his old guitar again.
Great.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Then I think our next...
We didn't do the part where the Sarah and the police officer are eating hot dogs.
I don't care.
Okay.
We're like 40 minutes in. I don't give a shit.
Fine. I guess we can just keep going through the murders. We should probably mention the villain, the big villain, at some point. Like, this is around the point where they start getting reports to the big villain that bad things are happening.
Yeah, Top Dollar, a.k.a. Michael Wincott.
A.k.a. the pilot, I think, from Alien Resurrection?
I don't know. He's always a gravelly dirtbag, and...
In this one, he's got kind of a big fake Texas accent.
I don't know what's going on with him, honestly, but whatever.
Yeah, he's a weird dude. There's a lot going on with this character.
I mean, when we see him, the first time we see him, fucking Bai Ling is taking a shower, and he's out there next to some woman, and then it turns out that the woman is dead, and they're like, "Oh, we broke her.
I guess we fucked her to death," is pretty much what they're trying
to... That's implying, and then... Later, when Gideon shows up, we find out that that's his sister?
Yeah, that he claims that she's his sister, and that he's like, "What, don't you see the family resemblance?" Ha 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 ha.
Which I think is, I mean, he said his father's daughter, so maybe half-sister?
Yeah, but they're very clearly fucking.
Oh, and, very clearly.
And also fucking random women to death.
I guess.
It's just I'm not sure what's going on. Biling's character in this is... too many things.
Just as confused as the rest of this gang.
It's just too much stuff going on.
Because Bai Ling's like, "Ooh, I'm a sexy murder lady, and I love to cut out eyeballs. She's obsessed with eyeballs."
I mean, let's be very frank about what she is in this movie. She's a mystic sex Asian.
Yes. It's very true. She is the mystic oriental lady who knows about the arts of mysticism, and she's obsessed with eyeballs because they're magic.
Her character is a mess. She's like, "Oh, I'm going to carve the eyes out of this lady so we can use them to cast evil oriental spells I know. Also, I'm going to say some inscrutable stuff, so I hope you'll..." Brandon Lee is the only other person in this movie that's Asian at all.
Well, yeah, man. We're only allowed two non-white people per thing. So you get two black people, you get two Asian people.
Yeah, so it's kind of a... She's just a mess. I'm just going to be straightforward. I mean, when is Bai Ling not when she's in a movie?
I think that's what you cast her for. You're like, "Yo, I've got an Asian character that's just confused. We don't know what's going on with it. Can you just show up and be Asian? That's all we need."
Yeah, that's a Crank 2 High Voltage, Star Wars Attack of the Clones. I think she's in there just being completely nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole episode of Lost. Always good for that.
So the... The main thing now is he's going to go after Fun Boy, who is boning down with Sarah's mom. Sarah tries to get her mom to do anything, but like when she shows up at the gang hideout club, she's just like, "No, here, honey, here's some money. Go get food.
I'm going to bang with this guy and also
get real drug high and then have sex."
Yeah, and this is going to kick off one of my favorite things about the Crow, who is this... dark goth anti-hero character, but also every time he does anything, he does it with some Saturday morning cartoon lessons.
Oh yeah.
So the two of them are up in a room boning down and shooting up what is apparently morphine,
I guess,
and then a crow shows up. Not the crow, a crow, the familiar crow. And they're like, "Oh, it's a big bird, man.
Come here, birdie."
oh, this is Squab. And then the actual crow shows up, and they, like, shoot at him, and he's like, oh, you can't shoot me. I'm a ghost man.
Now I shot you in the leg or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and while you're passed out from being shot in the leg, I'm going to teach this here woman a lesson.
He goes,
by grabbing hold of you, I can will the drugs out of your system?
Yeah, and also he makes her look at herself in the mirror and says, God is the word, or no, mother is the word for God spoken on the lips of children and babies across the world. And she's like, what is that? Is that the Bible or something? What are we doing?
What are you talking about here?
What? Are you going to fucking kill me? Because don't judge me, dick face.
And this, as would, I mean, anyone, freaks her out.
Yeah, it freaks her out quite a bit.
And she runs off, and then Fun Boy gets murdered by overdose of drugs in heart.
Yeah, gives him too many drugs in his heart, and then he chokes on his own blood.
Yeah.
But
Tony Todd finds him right before he dies. And is like, yeah, it was a fucking crow guy.
Yeah, the crow dude winks at him and falls out the window.
Yeah.
And then does his thing where he disappears, because he can do that. He can just disappear and reappear wherever he wants. That's one of his mystic crow powers.
Now, after this, we have a meeting of Gideon and Top Dollar,
mm-hmm.
which, again, reinforces that I don't think anyone knows what they're doing.
No.
Because apparently, Gideon works for Top Dollar?
Which is weird, because he's just a pawn shop guy. I assume he pays a commission to Top Dollar. Like, he probably pays protection money or something.
I don't know, because when he's like, oh, why did this place burn down? And he's, like, accusing him of burning the place down?
Yeah, he thinks Gideon burned the place down for, like, insurance money or to get out of the business or something.
But they never say insurance money. They're just like, ooh, did you burn it down? You're like, why?
Well, yeah.
Why would he do that and then, I don't know, shoot himself in the hand or stab himself in the hand.
Yeah, so anyway, for some reason, Gideon also isn't very forthcoming with useful information in this scene. I don't know why he's being cagey at the moment, but he's like, I don't know, a man came in and busted me up, and he had a white mime face, and I couldn't shoot him no more. Now anyway, who's going to shit on me? Who among you shits on me? Someone's got to beat me up, stuff me in a black trash bag, and shit on me, and then drop me off in front of my parents' house, or else they'll know I was out.
UCB, baby.
That's one of my favorite bits from that old show. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
they talk about him. They find out that the guy who killed Tintin and Fun Boy is also the person who did this.
Mm-hmm. And his name is Eric Draven, and we killed him a year ago. And also,
I'm going to kill Gideon because of reasons.
Yeah, he kills Gideon because he has a big sword in his hands, and he's one of that kind of villain who's just like, oh, did I get all the information I need out of you? Sword. Okay, great.
Yay.
He stabs him through the throat and then is like, how come you're not already dead? Shoot, shoot.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, you stabbed him in the throat 2 seconds ago. That's not an area where you instantly die.
I mean, I dig the performance of Top Dollar. He's a well-acted, cool-looking character, but his motivations are just what?
Yeah, he is...
He's high on smoked eyeball is the problem.
He is all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, he's a cool-looking character. Don't get me wrong. I don't know what he's supposed to... I can't figure it out at all.
The next morning, Sarah's mother is making breakfast for her.
It's almost too late, because Sarah's spent most of her young life living basically with a drugged out mom, and she doesn't know how to react to this new nice mom.
Now, the whole thing is, it's supposed to be like, oh yeah, she turned her life around because the crow, like, scared her. But she very definitely, when this movie ends, backslides and does not actually be a good mom. Like, I know that we're supposed to think she's gonna be good, but, like, the second her daughter goes, like, oh, fuck you, you've been a bad mom, she's like, ah, fine, fuck this, I've never been good at mom stuff, I'm dumping these eggs in the trash.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that took, like, 3 seconds. You didn't even apologize for being terrible. You're just like, nah, well, this didn't go exactly how I dreamed it would, so yeah. I'm out.
Well, they have to work together to get things back to normal, because the daughter's been raised to be like, my mom's a useless druggie who keeps a house I can sleep in.
And her mom is a useless druggie. One night of a dude in makeup scaring you doesn't stop that.
This is scary for everybody, John. When she wakes up, or when the daughter wakes up, when Sarah wakes up and her mom's in there like, oh, how do you like your eggs? And she's like, what the fuck is happening?
Darla, what are you doing?
Is this a weird new drug that's making you like this? I am instantly skeptical.
Also, I gotta say, Darla really reminded me of a dollar store Drew Barrymore.
I know. She looks like a dollar store Drew Barrymore from the moment you first see her.
Yeah.
I was like, is that Drew? No.
There's no way.
In 1994, absolutely not.
Yeah. But anyway, it's very weird when you first see her.
Yeah, the first time you see her, it is a little startling. So the two of them are now having that storyline happen. Meanwhile, the Crow goes to visit Ernie Hudson, the sheriff, in his home. Oh, I guess he's a beat cop because he was busted down from detective for getting involved in that first murder. He like got too involved in like looking into Top Dollar and stuff, and so some corrupt cop bust him down.
Yeah, there's another detective that is his main, I guess, foil on the force.
Yeah,
but mostly he just revels in being an asshole to
him. Yeah, there's a whole cop storyline that feels like it was heavily cut down.
Yeah, because there's also his wife on the force.
Yeah,
he's getting a divorce from.
Yeah, it's a bunch of. It feels like there was supposed to be more stuff going on. Anyway, he's at his house in his underwear, but he still has his cop hat on because he's, I guess, also an amateur stripper for himself.
Yeah, he was just in the mirror, like, "Ooh, hot cops here."
Yeah, which he literally the only reason he's in his hat is to give Draven one of those pithy Crow lines.
Hey, your hat's still on.
Your hat's still. Yeah, because he asked him like, "What are you doing here, man? Your hat's still on." Well, I guess I can't think of a real question. I can't follow up on my line of questions now.
Well, you're
right about the hat, that's for sure.
But he's in just a wife beater, which means he had to have taken off the rest of his clothes, and in so doing, probably take off the hat and then put it back on.
He didn't even wear a police hat when he was in his police outfit. So he went home, took off his outfit, and then put on his police hat, which he otherwise did not carry with him.
Oh, you know he's just looking in the mirror like, yeah, looking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Albrecht, you still got it.
You're supposed to be a beat cop. This is right. But yeah, they have a little heart-to-heart about what Eric is up to. He's like, yeah, I'm going to kill everybody who was involved in the killing of Shelley. So, and then he's like, by the way, don't smoke. It's bad for you.
No, these things will kill you. You get it? Because I'm already dead?
Yeah. Also, though, seriously, don't smoke. Look ways before crossing the street. look several ways. I don't know how many.
The big take from this scene, though, is Ernie Hudson's character sat with Shelley the entire time she was in the hospital for like 30 hours.
Because he was trying to... he was hoping she... He was being nice, basically.
I mean, he says it's because he wanted to get a lead off of her, but... We're supposed to be like, oh, yeah, he's just a good guy and is actually concerned about the city and whatnot.
Yeah, he's just a good cop. So anyway, the Crow like holds his hand and kind of absorbs that knowledge.
Yeah, he absorbs the entire memory and he's like, oh, no. Oh.
And then I think my favorite line here was the end of this whole sequence, which is when the Crow gets up to leave and Ernie Hudson's like, hey, you gonna do that disappearing real fast trick? And he goes, no, I was thinking of using the front door.
Okay.
And then great. What? Because when you get outside, we haven't seen you drive exactly, so I don't know if you're going to get outside then just vanish and reappear somewhere else in Detroit.
Yeah, because all you do is jump out a window and then cease to be there, so... Eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird line. It's supposed to be him being pithy and sarcastic, kind of, but it doesn't add up when you see how the Crow gets around town, which is always by falling off a convenient building.
Yeah.
There's never a point where you see him starting up his old van that was still parked where it was when he died.
Full and of then two Ant-Man comes out.
Well, it's all full of band equipment because he used to have a band, so it's all full of shit. I'm wondering what's going on with Hangman's joke. Like, do you think they kept going without him?
Did they find another probably lead guitarist?
Yeah, or did they have to break up at that point?
Who knows?
I'm confused. I want to know more about Hangman's joke.
I think Hangman's joke ended because
they became something new.
Yeah, they had to not be that.
Yeah, he legally controlled the name, and they had to change the name to the Hangman's Joke Experience.
Well, they had to change it to the Killing Joke, and then they got sued by DC.
They changed it to the Killing Joke, and then they changed it to the Killing Moon, and it just didn't go well for anyone.
Then they changed their name to the Killers, and they stayed that way to this day.
Moved to Las Vegas. Became Mormons, I think.
Next up. Eric is going to go after T-Bird and Skank are driving together. They're going to go pull a job, and they don't know that Fun Boy is dead. They think he's still just sex.
They do know that Tintin's dead,
yeah.
And they're worried that someone's coming after them. But they're going to go pull a job, and they're going to get some road sodas, which weirdly in this movie they call road beers.
Weird, right?
I mean, yes, they are. Road soda is a term for a beer you drink on the road. But Road Beers is a much more blatant version of that. I was confused to hear it. I've always heard the term road sodas. I don't know. Maybe
that's weird.
But so Skank goes into a liquor store to pick up road sodas and jerky and what have you, while T-Bird sits around outside and smokes in his car.
And the crow shows up behind him and is like, "My dude, you must drive.
I am your passenger and you must drive this car, T-Bird."
I don't get what this entire scene was for. Because he makes T-Bird drive around, go like 90 miles an hour through the town, get chased by cops.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Skank gets into a van or some shit and
tries
drives
to follow,
after him.
Yeah.
And
but it all comes to nothing because Skank crashes into the cop car that's chasing them. And then he pulls the car over somewhere and turns on, or I guess the car was full of explosives because the job they were going to do involved explosives.
Well, yeah, their whole thing is Devil's Night, they do a bunch of arson stuff.
Yeah, so they're getting ready to do a bunch of arson stuff, and instead he's like giving him a big speech about how, oh, maybe you'll remember who I am.
Oh, man.
A year ago, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, the devil stood in shame because he felt how bad good was.
Yeah,
whatever the line is.
He has a line about how the devil saw the wickedness of goodness or something. And he realizes who he's dealing with. He sees that this is a guy he killed a year ago, and he's like, "Oh my God, it's you! You can't be doing this! The devil!
People don't come back! They don't come back!"
But anyway...
But sometimes they do come back.
Yeah. In this case, it turns out that the crow way over-rigs this death. This is way too much pyrotech for one guy.
Yeah, he shoots this car, like, over a like little pier going into the water,
mm-hmm.
and it explodes
in midair
into pieces.
Yeah, it's just too much stuff. He's like, "I'm gonna put you in the car and turn the car on and send you flying off into a wall or something." Oh, never mind, it's off a pier. You're gonna drown in a car. Whoop, never mind. I put a grenade on your crotch, so you'll have hot spark crotch, because the grenade for some reason shoots hot sparks.
Hell yeah, it does.
So you're gonna have a hot spark crotch until you drown in a river. Whoop, never mind. I also filled the car with bombs.
Yeah. So he kills the fuck out of T-Bird.
Yeah. Now, at this point, Skank, running scared, goes running back to Top Dollar and is like, "They killed everyone but me, man.
Oh, man.
Shit on me, brother.
Shit on me. Oh. Where's Gideon? He normally shits on me.
We have a deal.
We reciprocate.
Yeah, we shit on each other, friend."
And Skank is afraid and tells them that, like, T-Bird got fused into the car or something from
the
explosion.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, he got fried to the car, man. He's part of his car." Do you get it? Because his name was T-Bird.
Yeah.
For some reason, at this point, this raving, recently in a car accident, obvious meth head lunatic that used to be one of your like gang dudes, but no longer has a gang that he's a member of. And Top Dollar doesn't just go, "Huh, so he's killing you guys one by one? Well, I don't care about you in the slightest, so I'll just kill you and that'll solve my problem."
And doesn't do that, and continues to be weird, because right after this, he's like, "Oh, it's time to have a meeting of all of the crime bosses in the city, I guess? His underlings?
I'll call a bunch of crime dudes up."
He's like, "Yes, hello, crime dudes. It is time that we stop doing an arsons on Devil's Night, because
we're gonna
it's
do an
boring
even,
now.
We're going to do an even bigger arsons."
At one point, one of his underlings slash other crime bosses is like, "But it's been so profitable." Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, they never explain how burning down a bunch of buildings every year makes a lot of money. They do have a fun line for Bai Ling here where she just, from the background, just goes like, "I like the pretty colors." And everyone's like, "Oh, great, you brought her with you. Okay, thank you."
But, I mean, the acting on this for Top Dollar is great, because he's a villain who's just like, "All I care about is being crazy and burning stuff down. Like, I don't actually care about money." He's like, "Greed is for amateurs. Anarchy, chaos, that's where it's at. I'm going to burn the whole fucking city down." You're like, okay, you're a villain.
Yeah, he's like a Batman villain.
That's great.
Yeah, if
everyone else here shouldn't be following you because you're clearly a Batman villain and everyone else here is like, "We're in this for money."
Well, I mean, that's pretty much how Batman villains operate, though. They always get a big gang of dudes who are in it for the money. Who are just sort of like, "What are you?" "Well, I work for the Two-Face guy, so I got to wear this two-side mask."
That's what I do.
But I'm in it for the paycheck, you know? That's what it did.
I'm in it for this thug life.
It's just a job, brother. I don't take it home with me.
Well, I do have to take the costume home with me.
I have to have it laundered and pressed.
Yeah, half I'm in of charge of my own.
I got to launder and press the left half. The right half, obviously, I got to run over with my car every night.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing. You know, you get used to it.
But, you know, the pension's real good.
You try finding construction jobs in Gotham. You'd think they'd actually be very common because there's constantly buildings blowing up.
Yeah, well, that was my doing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help out my construction buddies.
Yeah, if Top Dollar was a Batman villain, which one would he be? Anarchy?
Maybe.
Anarchy's usually played younger than this guy is.
He's basically a less laughy Joker.
Yeah,
he's just like, I'm just crazy and I love killing things.
Yeah. So also, he loves swords. He has a big wall of swords.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway,
Crow shows up at the meeting.
Yeah.
And we get a very 90s fight scene of, like, you have loud music thumping, and then he's doing, like, flips around a room while gunshots are firing in the dark. And
we got to do the intro, because he jumps up on the table, and he just, because they've still got Skank there, who's been given one of the best lines in the movie, where they're like, how do you feel, Skank? Like a little fucking worm on a big hook, man! Throw someone shit on me, please!
I love that he shows up and he's like, yo, I just want that guy.
I want that guy. And I was really kind of hoping that
Top Dollar would just be like, all right,
yeah,
here, fuck it.
That seems very reasonable.
You've killed three of the other guys. The entire unit that he was part of is gone. Sure, kill this guy and leave if that's all you want. Quit fucking up my business.
But instead he's like, well, you can't have him. Well, I should gravel that up. You can't have him.
Well, you can't have him.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Crow pulls another Jesus pose. He's like, well, if I've heard you say your rules. Now, Jesus pose, I want to see you enforce them.
And he gets shot, and he falls down, and then they can't find him. And he's under the table, and he starts beating the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, he starts murdering everybody.
He murders everybody in the room except for Bai Ling, Tony Todd, and
Skank, and Top Dollar.
He kills Skank.
Well, yeah, but not till the end.
Yeah, but I'm saying, of the people in the room, he manages to kill everyone.
Yeah.
Except for those three.
I do like the part where Skank tries to get out of being killed by just claiming that he's not Skank.
He's like, I'm not Skank. That's Skank. He's dead. Yeah, he is.
I forgot that it ends in a pithy line.
Of course it does.
Every one of them is so bad. But yeah, so Skank gets thrown out a window and dies. Yeah.
And now he's like, oh, well, I guess my time here is ogre, and he's...
Yeah, he's going to go lie down and go to bed.
Yeah, he goes to the fucking cemetery, and he's like, oh, Shelly, I loved you so much,
And then Sarah's there waiting for him, and she's like, you were going to leave without saying goodbye. Well, you'll just have to forgive me for that.
They have a little heartfelt moment, but...
You're out too late, and you don't have any reflective safety wear on.
The big plan now, though, is they believe that killing the bird will stop him from being immortal.
Well, yeah, that's because Bai Ling knows that because she's magic.
Yeah,
because
she's magic.
Uh-huh.
So the plan is to kidnap Sarah to get him to show up at a church where Tony Todd will snipe a crow so that Top Dollar can kill this dude.
You'd think he'd just also kill the dude. I mean, he's got a sniper rifle out anyway. Just keep sniping.
Yeah, but
sniper,
Top Dollar
keep sniping.
Is one of those people who's like, no, I want to kill him personally.
That's true. Anyway, this all works. Tony Todd kidnaps Sarah, drags her to a church where they start menacing her eyes with knives. The Crow shows up and is like, hey, let the girl go and I'll let you all walk out of here. And then the Crow gets shot but not killed. Like the crow that's a crow.
The
animal that's a crow.
Animal Crow gets shot, isn't dead, but is injured, which means human Crow gets shot and
can get injured. But probably still can't die. He can get injured though. You can't die till the Crow dies.
So now we have a big fight in the chapel.
Yeah, Tony Todd stays out of it. It's just a sword fight kind of thing.
Yeah, Tony Todd ends up getting taken out by Ernie Hudson, who shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Top Dollar and Eric end up having a sword fight where they're on the roof at one point, and he pulls the fucking cross off of the top of the tower and uses it as a sword.
It's like a cross weather vane that luckily when you pull it out of the chimney turns out to be actually be a big old two-handed sword.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there was a spike putting it into the top of this building, so I'm going to use the back end of this as a sword.
But before he gets to the roof, Bai Ling has managed to catch the animal crow, and she's like, well, now I'm going to kill this crow, and then you'll be dead, so that's useful.
But then the crow pecks her eyes out. Oh, the delicious comeuppance and irony.
Do you get it? She was all eye-obsessed.
And then justice found her...
in the eyes. Of an angel.
I don't actually see her die, though. I mean, her eyes do get pecked out, but then she just sort of falls.
Well, she falls down like a bell tower shaft or something.
I think she was only up like one story. You could still survive that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's just that this crow really wanted to peck the light, the heat it saw in her eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In her eyes.
Yeah. And kill her in a church.
In her eyes.
They have a sword fight up on the roof. It's very clear that Top Dollar's winning because he's already managed to shoot and stab the crow. But then the crow goes, by the way, I have something for you. I want you to have it. I don't want it anymore. And then he just grabs Top Dollar by the face and passes along all of his dead wife's pain.
Here, 30 hours of pain, all at the same time for you.
All for you.
And then Top Dollar freaks out, falls off the roof, and gets impaled on the horns of a gargoyle.
Do you get it?
And
then the gargoyle spout starts pouring his blood all over the place.
It's the gargoyle that has water come out of it, but now it's blood.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't really work like that because it's actually... There's a drainage that goes into that mouth. It's not just from the top of the... Well, anyway.
There's also top drainage, John. It's a corner gargoyle, so there's top and side drainage that leads into
it. Oh, I got top drainage.
It's fine. Everything's fine. This all makes perfect sense. There's a reason that gargoyle is spitting hot Kool-Aid.
So, yeah. Ernie Hudson gets...
shot, but he's fine.
Shot in his fight with fucking... His name is Grange, is Tony Todd, by the way. We've just been calling him Tony Todd, but it's Grange.
Well, they don't really say Grange in the movie.
They really don't.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna worry about that. They barely say Top Dollar.
Yeah. So, yeah, he gets taken away in an ambulance, and the dick detective shows up, and he's like, yeah, you'll find your vigilante up there. He's impaled on a gargoyle.
Yeah.
And you're like, how is that gonna stick? You've just sort of said, oh, yeah, no, this random dude who's definitely a crime boss killed off his underlings and himself.
Yeah, yeah. Whoa, how's his dick doing right now then, Albrecht? Because I'm a dick detective.
Dick detective at large. Uncut.
I'm going to get out of the force and become a private dick detective.
Only these public dick detectives.
I'm a private's eye. Okay, so anyway, yeah, that all happens, and Eric goes back to the grave again, and this time his ghost wife comes out and touches him on the forehead.
Wife shows up and is like, it's okay, you've done enough murders to deserve heaven now.
Yeah, you get to go to heaven, finally, because you did all the murders, and then he breathes, and you can see his breath, because it's gotten cold all of a sudden, because she's been pretty frigid. Yeah. Yeah, I think this happened before the term was coined. I forget when they killed... some Green Lantern's
wife. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget when that turn was coined, but
I mean, I would argue about the terminology on this just because she was basically dead from the beginning.
Oh, she was never alive, so she can't have been put in the fridge.
It wasn't like she was killed in order to spur the hero on that we're seeing. Like, he had a crisis of
He is literally avenging her death for the entire film.
Oh, yeah, but it's basically like if instead of her being fridged in like the first act of a story,
mm-hmm.
it's like we cut do see that her first raped act out and just do the last two.
We do see her raped and mutilated in flashback. I think this counts as a regular old fridging.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not. I'm just saying there is some idea that you could argue against.
There's no gray area, John, because it's all black. It's black and white. The crow is badass. Yeah, so anyway, that's the crow.
It ends, and we get one final narrative voiceover about how love never dies.
Yeah, people can die, cities can burn, but true love, that's eternal. And I'm like, so those two skeletons in that graveyard are in love with each other? Great, glad to hear it. Okay.
Yep.
I guess I don't have to worry about that then.
You do not.
Them two sets of skeleton bones are in love.
Hey, man. this movie clearly has an afterlife.
That's true. There's defo a heaven, and you have to murder your way to heaven.
Yeah.
It'd be great if she just let him right back down to hell with it.
I went to hell, too. Mm-hmm. We were terrible people.
We weren't good people. I mean, we were super gentrifying a neighborhood that didn't need it.
I killed an old lady just before I died.
Rent control. I wanted her apartment. It was like $200 a month.
Anyway, let's go burn.
Off to the lake of fire.
So that's the crow. That is...
the first of the crows.
The first crow, the one that people have seen, and it is what spawned Crowmania for so many years for so many skinny goth guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then in the second movie, the person who dies is named Crowface Blackbird. yeah, so... anyway, there you go. That was the crow. We got some stuff.
So let's do what we normally do.
Oh, okay.
Let's do our best and worst.
Okay, sure.
Jeff, give me your best of the movie.
I'm gonna say that my best is gonna be an ironic thing because it gave me a lot of laughs and giggles. Actually, hang on, no. The best thing is the Nine Inch Nails song that plays when he's running around on a rooftop.
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
That is the best thing in the movie.
Fucking great. That is a jam.
They keep calling me.
I love that song. I forget what album it's normally on. But it's just a fucking killer song.
Man. What album is that on? Because I can only think of two soundtracks that it's on.
Right? Yeah, it shows up primarily in sound.
It's like this and Lost Highway, I think.
I'm not going to say what album I think it's on because I'll be wrong.
Yeah, that's fine.
But it's a fucking great song, so I was loving hearing that. I was going to say that, ironically, my favorite thing in this movie is the after-school G.I. Joe stuff that he keeps doing.
Oh, how he's like, you need to straighten up and fly right. Anyway, I'm going to go murder this guy.
Hey, the cemetery's the safest place to be at night, but remember, when you're walking home, try to find a helpful, trustworthy adult, like a police officer or a mailman.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah, I just kind of got a giggle out of that because I'd forgotten it was all in there. What about you? What was your favorite thing?
Favorite thing in the movie for me?
For me.
No, 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 no.
Let's not fall into cheap nerd stereotypes, John.
No.
I started it, but let's not. let's agree to a detente.
Let's agree to disagree about a detente.
Oh, okay, so you're going to keep singing Bohemian Rhapsody? Fair enough.
I'm going to say probably my favorite thing in this, oddly enough, is going to be Byling getting her eyes pecked out.
Yeah, it was great.
Because I was just like, wow, you guys really did it.
Yeah, she was standing there with the bird. She's like, and I guess I win because I have bird and knife. And the bird's like, peck, peck, peck. And she doesn't like, you know, pull the bird away from her face. It's just a crow. Just move your arm that's holding its feet away from your face. Just... it weighs 3 pounds max.
Maximum poundage.
But, you know, it's a magic crow, so what do I know? I don't know the average wing strength of magic crows.
Huh. I guess... oh, I just looked up Dead Souls, which is that song.
Yeah.
And it is only on the Crow soundtrack, the definitive Nine Inch Nails, the singles... and Downward Spiral Japanese edition.
Oh!
So if you got the Japanese import of Downward Spiral, you got to have Dead Souls on it too. Which, man, that's just going to make that album even better.
I know, that album already whips ass. It's easily the second best Nine Inch Nails album.
Yeah. I think there's only like one or two songs on there that I'm not like 100% on board with.
Yeah, as opposed to the best Nine Inch Nails album, which is unimpeachable start to finish.
Yeah.
Every song on it is an instant classic.
Of course.
And it's one of the very few things in the world on which we automatically agree.
Yeah.
But we're pretty much against the world on this one. Yeah. Pretty
Us
Hate Machine.
Versus the World.
Pretty Hate Machine is the best Nine Inch Nails album. Just put it out there. Fight me.
Actually fight me IRL.
Yeah.
So the worst thing in the movie, Jeff, for you?
I'm just going to say the confusing villain motivations. Like, I'm not sure what
I don't even know if that's the worst thing for me, just because I love how confused it all is.
I love Michael Wincott. He's a great performance in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He's an awesome, scary-looking, weird, romanticized villain, but I'm not sure what he's doing. It doesn't add up to anything.
He's got too many things going on at the same time.
Yeah, there's just too much going on. Like, he kind of makes sense as, like, a mid-level Devil May Cry villain.
Yeah. Man. I love that guy.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Michael Wincott in general.
Yeah.
Dude's rad. But anyway, okay, so If not that, then just the sheer number of, you know, sweaty dirt bags that make up the majority of the film.
Sure.
I'm just like, come on, let's vary this up a little bit.
All right.
You got to kill three toothless, sweaty dirt bags, and then you can finally go back to hell where you belong? Great.
No, I have to kill four.
Well, yeah, but the Tintin doesn't appear especially sweaty. It might just be that it's raining out.
It might be. It's constantly raining, but it can't rain all the time. That's a reference to the movie.
Do you get it? What about you, John? What's your least favorite thing?
The worst thing in this movie is almost certainly the shitty one-liners.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
The pithy quote thing never lands.
No. I'm sure they did in 1994. Like, a 14-year-old me was probably like, fuck yeah, yeah, you tell that guy right before you kill him. Get some!
I don't know that it did. Because it's just, there's nothing. They don't make sense. It's like he had to ad-lib these and didn't know what to say.
Yeah. I know it's... I'm having only watched this and Laser Mission for my full extent of Brandon Lee movies.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's really mean of me to say it, but he just doesn't seem like he was a very good actor. Maybe he was going to get way better.
I mean, you never know. He could have.
Yeah. Anyway, so the pithy one-liners just fall flat every time.
Every single time.
Yeah.
All right, let's give this a rating. So we're going to give it a rating from 0 to 5. Each of us gives it the rating out of 10 for the movie. Jeff?
I don't know. I feel like any points I give this thing is going to be largely out of historical significance.
Which is fine. I'm almost certainly going to give this extra points for nostalgia and significance.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and throw a 3.
All
right. That feels about right to me. I mean, I'm not going to seek this thing out and watch it again anytime soon, but yeah, when you watch it, you're like, oh my God, 1994, this started the wave of the late 90s. Oh, we can do comic book movies as long as they're, you know, not, as long as they're like gritty, down-to-earth, real guys who murder.
Real guys who murder.
Murder their way through hobos.
Murdering their way through hobos.
I mean, because yeah, in the Blade movies, he beat up a lot of hobo-looking vampires.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, this really paved the way for the Spawn movie.
Yeah, the Spawn movie is another great example of that.
What can we do? Well, we can get a gritty murder comic with a rad soundtrack.
And let me remind you what Sabretooth looked like in the first X-Men movie.
Professional wrestler.
He was Tyler Labine, professional wrestler, yes. But he was dressed in, like, a shitty, ruffled long coat and, like, had his clothes all ruffled or nasty and so on. They were maintaining this thing that the villains in comic book movies for about an 8-year span there were mostly hobos.
Mostly just dirtbags, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the movie... I'm going to give it a 3.5. It's going to get the extra 0.5 just for the nostalgia factor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't... If I was rating it for what it actually is, it would probably go down to a 3 or a 2.5. It's not very great.
No.
But I'm going to give it a 3.5 for how influential it was.
It's super influential. I mean, I'm sure someone's working on a Crow movie right now. Like, literally right now. There's probably someone working
on one.
I'm
sure someone in Hollywood is like, I've got a Crow reboot for you.
It's time for the Crow.
It's time to bring back the Crow. You remember the Crow? We're making the Crow. How many Halloween costumes do you want to sell? Is it all of them? We're making the Crow again.
And this time he fights the Joker.
Are your Joker costumes not selling well? Here's the Crow. He fights the Joker, double costumes.
The two of them get merged in a fly teleporter. Now they're the Croaker.
Now they're Joe. The Joe.
Then in the sequel, he has to fight a volcano.
The Joe versus the volcano.
You're gonna
also,
sell.
Also, the volcano is the name of some dirtbag.
You're going to sell a million volcano costumes.
Anyway, that's a 6.5 out of 10 for The Crow. Something you could probably watch and not hate yourself for watching.
Sure.
Thank you so much for joining us on this travel back in time to the halcyon goth days of 1994.
Man, I remember actually going to goth clubs back before they all closed down in San Diego.
Man, I never went to a goth club until after... I had goth friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I no longer had goth friends, and then I went to a goth club, and I'm like, what am I doing here?
Oh, I went with goth friends to a goth club, and I got in trouble at the goth club right away for I guess you'd say clocking a guy for wearing a Target brand Halloween wizard costume as his goth outfit. I was like, look at that guy. He's wearing like a Zoltan the Wizard outfit. And he was like, hey, fuck you, buddy. And I was like, aw. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Normally goths are so friendly. I mean, this is on me. I shouldn't have done that. It was a social faux pas, Zoltan.
I think I went with a friend, but she was more like a scene kid than a goth.
You don't want that.
Anyway,
this is my favorite goth club story, and I'll be done after that. This is a little anecdote for the listeners. We went to a club I did not know was a goth club once, and it was 80s night, and I was maybe 22. And I did not know it was a goth club, and I heard it was 80s night, so I dressed as Crockett from Miami Vice.
Wow.
So I had like the white jacket and
a
skinny pink tie over like a white silk shirt, and I was just a blue silk shirt and white pants. And I, when it got in, I was like, everyone's 80s goth, you know, they were kind of all dressed like John Hughes side characters. And I was just like, what's up, everyone? I teased my hair out for this.
Oh, that's excellent.
I got pulled on stage for the costume contest just to be informed how badly I lost.
That is excellent.
You have very misread the room, sir.
Sir.
Quick, someone cue up the goth version of Axel F for this guy. Do, 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 Bela Lugosi's dead.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back in another couple weeks with more Movie Mastery. If you like what you listen to, please go to our Patreon page, System Mastery on Patreon.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere else is System Mastery. If you just Google System Mastery, you'll find all of our nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a ton of shows. We do a ton of work, and we'd like to get paid for it.
That's personally what it is. Very blunt, sir.
Yeah, fuck it. Give me your money.
Thank you so much.
If you don't give me money, I'm going to start setting fires, and then that's how fires get me money.
Yeah, specifically in Detroit, I guess. Maybe, probably. I don't know.
Anyway, thank you for joining us. We'll be back. You have a good one.
Bye. Ling.